nourishes itself and takes the appearance of living flesh, of a living entity, by using a double logic, namely the logic of materialism and the logic of idealism, mixed or one-sided or alternating, but always both. We have here informality of thinking, a kind of a Siamese twins. This modern idealism can never rear its bounds with modern materialism and vice versa. Those brothers might fight against each other and do bloody battles, but it turns out that they are the bloodier, the more brotherly they become. If we look at our present policy in the United States, then we find that not only by the Republicans are only more so than the Democrats have been, but by the Democrats also, this foreign policy has been a strange mixture of entirely unrealistic, materialistic appeals to the world, by which we became only suspicious, and as irrealistic and irreal, almost childish, idealistic appeals to the world, which made us only ridiculous. It is only more so than it is anywhere else. We are not in quality distinguished, but we are faster, more powerful, and more reckless than other nations, because we are so inexperienced. So again, here, in a concrete matter, this Siamese twin ghost, now a formal one, namely thinking alternatively or together on extreme materialistic or idealistic lines, bears those strange fruits, disasters and blunders, which we all permanently witness. One should think that an approach to ideas more than ideas could have been much more real and realistic as, let's say, the element of a foreign policy of the United States. The fact that this republic is still the best one, which guarantees habeas corpus most, that the constitution of this country is a constitution formed according to definite ethical ideals of men, organized and built in order to keep the possible highest standards of human worth and dignity, is a fact that does not play, or almost not play, any role in our political activities and propaganda. What are we doing instead? We are mainly doing the same thing the totalitarians do, only that we are doing it voluntarily. namely we argue with another ghost. The ghost is capitalism. And capitalism has been only the elder brother as a ghost of this socialism or communism as a ghost. It had started with the boundless optimism of the economists of capitalistic industry and capitalistic theory and economics, this boundless idealism of a foolish kind, that maintained that now, by mere economic principles, the means has been found to do the most good for most people, for the majority of people, and that the golden age will come. That well understood self-interest, harmonized, will redeem humanity, that ethical principles or morality even are no longer a problem, because as soon as everybody will live well, morality will come by itself. Man is essentially good, only give him a chance and he will show how good he is. They had promised the golden age, but Karl Marx and the socialists found a flaw in that it seemed to become a golden age only for those who have money. And they wanted the golden age according to the same principles, namely economic principles, strict materialistic principles, combined with a strange kind of idealism, namely to do the most good for the world and for everybody. They have been all such do-gooders, the capitalists and the socialists alike are such do-gooders, and they love humanity so much and in such a lethal way. It always ends, and if you don't want to be my brother, I will butt in your head. I have to save you, and you can only be saved by my means, and you will see, and if I have to murder you, I will save you. Not even his soul anymore, they don't believe in souls. But they have to save humanity and to bring about this glorious new world. And here they are all alike. The other ghost, capitalism. As if such a thing ever existed. It is a theory. And it is an ideology. As soon as one thinks that it can exist, explain the whole life on the globe and the life of humanity, it becomes such a blood-sucking ghost. And there are many who want young people to go to war for such a ghost in all camps. And nobody is able to tell them, apparently, what it is all about in simple terms. But those simple terms would be ethical terms. And we do not think in those terms anymore. We have learned to suspect them highly. We are here on the most shaky ground. So let's try to give a simple example. In the last war, where it could have been fairly clear that nobody was going here to make the world safe for democracy and what slogans like that might be, or to conquer the world for this wonderful racism that Hitler proclaimed, where it was quite sure that the question was only, shall innocent people be murdered by the millions under certain systems proclaiming the welfare of humanity? Shall we all fall prey to those kind of systems or not? How disoriented we were, you might see by this little anecdote. I was teaching at that time when America ended the war, military science at Princeton for young officers and officers aspirants who were supposed to go to the war, to this war. And this being America, they asked me, Mr. Blücher, we trust you, can you answer us one question? What reason is there we should join this war? What are we fighting for? We don't believe any of those phrases they tell us. We don't believe that Hitler is worse than we are. We cannot see it. A fine situation. So I tried to tell him a very simple thing, this courageous young man who asked me that. I said to him, well, I know why I joined this war effort, because I am, as an old man, doing it here. I want to teach philosophy and not military science. This is a small war contribution I can make. And I know why I would even be ready to join you in battle again. The reason is simple, sir. This is the very fact that when you uttered this question right here and asked me this question, what am I supposed to fight for, that I am perfectly sure that there would not suddenly occur a knock on the door. Some policeman would come in, take you away, and I will never know where you went and what became of you. This basic thing, that this cannot happen and shall not happen to anybody, this is indeed worth fighting for and losing one's life for it, because it means to save lives and to save people from a terrible fate. Well, we haven't seen it then, officially. We do not see it now, officially. And the hesitance to speak in terms like that is only too understandable, because the distrust of ethical terms, let alone moral phraseology, is in all of us. Realizing it or not, the deepest distrust we can have and have inherited by this our age. We pretend so often to believe in certain things. We pretend despairingly so, by finally saying, driven into a corner, but one must believe in something. Well, if one starts with the idea that one must believe in something, one will certainly believe in the cheapest and most worthless thing that is offered, the next best thing. And one will not be able to develop real loyalty there, because one will have to change one's adherence, to change it again and again, till nothing of a personal consistency and a worthwhile harmony and meaningfulness is left in the human person. The person itself is destroyed. So the formal, let's say, the white sheet, the white and the black sheet mixed, colorless, in which all those ghosts like racism, nationalism, communism, capitalism, and all the isms appear, the closest in which they frighten us so much, are those forms of materialistic and idealistic logic combined or separated? Logic. We call, or can call, or I do call, this whole age of human development, which is mainly Western civilization, since the beginning of Hebrew religious speculation and Greek philosophic speculation, I call it the logical age. It starts with the proclamation, the Lord is the Word, Logos, Jehovah is the Word. It starts with the proclamation of Heraclitus. There's only one ruling principle in the world that establishes all harmonies and all laws, and that is the Logos, the Word again, the thought, later the idea. The idea in theological forms, the idea in philosophic forms, but always the idea. And when the great scientific philosopher, at least that, Whitehead, said once to his students here at Harvard, don't talk so much about this so-called glorious philosophic development in Western thought. They have all been only commentators to Plato and Aristotle. No more. Then he had a grain of truth in his hand, namely the innermost logical principle, the idealized, in the wrong way, logical principle were just the ideas of Plato. And on the other hand, the material illusions, ideas again, ideas about certain final material substances which we can discover, get hold of, become master of, and which will then explain to us everything in the world, what we are doing and what we have to do. Everything will be known by then. We will have truth. We will have truth in two ways, either by understanding, following, and acting upon according to the eternal ideas of Plato, idealism, or by understanding and acting according to the mystical inner will that seems to be contained in mere matter, finally in what the Greeks called atoms. Now we have tried to get hold of the atom, and it eludes us again and again in modern physical science. And now the physical scientists, the physicists, are the first to be ready to give that age-old superstition up and say, we do not know what we mean anymore by matter. It is only to be wished for that philosophers might come who handle ideas so well, so so well that they built and have built us all those ideological ghosts and systems, if they would come and confess, we don't know what we are talking about anymore, because we do no more know what ideas are, then we will hear the death bell of this age which has been so glorious. What turned out in the end is the naked Logos itself. And the naked Logos appeared in mere mathematics, where it is completely meaningless, where it does not have any indication of being able to help human beings except in being applied to natural sciences, where the Logos now has become a child, a naked child, that plays joyfully its own games and presents us with the most logical, conclusive, wonderful, formal systems of human thought that have ever been produced. An aesthetic joy, a wonderful game, that the human mind should be able to pursue games like that, to invent games like that, is quite astonishing. But every real modern mathematician, when you tell him that his doings are worth anything in the sense of human life, will tell you, oh, please don't mistake me, modern mathematics has nothing whatsoever to do with truth. It also has nothing whatsoever to do with reality. It has only to do with its own reality, which is the inner conclusiveness of mere formal relations. Here we have finally the great Logos, who has been called Jehovah, who has been called and admired, and who has been called the Logos, the great Logos that rules everything in the world. And here he is finally, this little playing naked child that naively comes and says, what of me you expected, salvation of mankind? Are you crazy? I am just a child, or I am just a tool. I am your tool, don't you see it? What you have been doing is analyzing your own formal mental capacities, and you are back to it. You are alone with yourself again. You haven't gotten any real grip on the world. You don't know how much illusion there was in everything like that. Don't you see it now? Don't you see how none of those principles is workable anymore? How you fool yourself permanently by those logical principles that you have believed in? They have brought about this new situation. But the philosophers, I mean the wrong ones, who call themselves philosophers, the metaphysical theoreticians, better of our time, they will build us one ideology after the other of it. The two brands, idealistic or materialistic, or mixed economy, so to speak. Or capitalistic and socialistic, or mixed economy, to put it in the right field. But they will not come and tell us those are all only empty formal brain children of an entirely fictional and unrealistic speculation. The idealist speculation brings us farther and farther away from what we could call the metaphysical reality of man, which reality is that he is not a slave of ideas, that he is the man, the being that makes ideas, and that he is responsible for the ideas he makes, and not that the ideas are responsible for him and his doings. The fact that he lives in a metaphysical world as well as in a physical world, and that this metaphysical world is a reality and even the higher reality, and that the physical world is also his reality, though perhaps his lower reality. This is not the distinction of spirit and matter. It's an entirely different distinction. The idealists are very spiritual. They are spiritual to such a degree that they become so abstract and so thinking only in principles of ideas that they just tear us away from our inner, higher, metaphysical reality, because they make us one idol, and an idol is always only an idea, after the other, and ask us to believe in it, to accept it, and to live according to it. The materialists, in their form, in the black sheep of this, Siamese twins, they try to tell us that there is only material reality, that the metaphysical reality does not exist, and by that they do not cut out only the metaphysical reality, they cut out the physical reality as well. Because the physical reality of man is by no means only a materialistic reality. The physical reality of man is also the ideas and prejudices and his dreams, that means phenomena that formerly have been called spiritual phenomena, which they might be. They are surely physical phenomena, namely they are the conditions given to man, the conditions under which he lives, the conditions he has to cope with. If one betrays him and tells him that those conditions are merely material conditions, then one even makes the physical world irreal and fictitious. So the activity of the ghosts is to take the living blood out of both kinds of reality in which we live, to make reality in both its spheres irreal and fictional to us. Here we have already the key, the metaphysical key here, for what we could call imposed and propagated metaphysical insanity. The psychological insanity growing in our age permanently is due to the phenomena produced by our time and by the situation men find themselves in. That is the conditio per quam, the condition by which mental insanity, psychic insanity, comes about. But there is to it a conditio sine qua non, a condition without which this condition could not arise. And that conditio sine qua non, that condition without the which the specific mental diseases of our time would be impossible, this condition is just the permanent imposition of those ghosts that cause what I call metaphysical insanity. They ruin common sense. And to ruin common sense, that means to ruin wisdom. Because wisdom and understanding with which true philosophy is concerned has not much to do with so-called knowledge.